escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
And I'm Ann Northrup.
Welcome back, Ann.
Thank you. And thank you to Chris Cooper, who was kind enough to sit in for me last week when I had other things I had to do. He is always a treat to have on the show.
And as last week, we start with some troubling news. The Human Rights Campaign has fired its president, Alfonso David, over his involvement in the Andrew Cuomo scandal. And Joni Madison is the interim president. We will introduce you to her.
And discuss the pros and cons of the firing of Alfonso. The Supreme Court, it will come as no surprise to you, has upheld Texas's, well, it's refused to stop for the moment Texas's ban on abortion, ignoring rights secured almost 50 years ago in Roe v. Wade.
Extremely alarming. We're also going to remember abortion rights pioneer Patricia McGinnis, who has died at the age of 93. What a story.
And who went on to work for LGBT rights, too. And as the NFL football season opens this weekend, the out gay player Carl Nassib has made the official roster of the Las Vegas Raiders and will be the first out gay player in the NFL.
A judge in North Carolina has sided with a veteran teacher who was fired by his Catholic school, not for being gay, but for posting about marrying his partner. And in Iowa, students are standing up for a bisexual teacher who was put on leave after he mentioned that he was bisexual.
There was a horrific anti-gay attack in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
We have a picture of the suspects in that case. We remember a beloved gay physician and activist in Florida and actor Michael K. Williams, who was famous for two gay roles.
And we'll talk about China's latest crackdown on LGBTQ people and women and other crackdowns around the globe.
So the Human Rights Campaign, we had told you that Alfonso David, the president, was under investigation by their board for his role in aiding Governor Cuomo, his old boss. He worked for him as chief counsel for 8 years. In the aftermath of accusations of sexual harassment against Cuomo in December. Now, David spoke out saying that they were asking him to go quietly this weekend and wouldn't show him the report and didn't, and he says the report didn't prove that he did anything wrong, and he said he would not go quietly, but then on Monday night they fired him for cause. The board was unanimous. There were two abstentions, but nobody voted for him, saying his conduct did material damage to the Human Rights Campaign and that they've received hundreds of negative communications about David staying in the job.
Well, I think it's very complicated. They accuse him of lying about the report. They said they never told him that the report was finished or that it exonerated him. And so basically they're firing him for bringing opprobrium on the organization and for having a conflict of interest in working with the Cuomo people in the midst of this this scandal about Cuomo's sexual harassment.
Yes, I think what really irked the board was that he did all this stuff with the Cuomo people without telling them, without saying, look, you know, I used to work with Cuomo. They're asking me to do this. I'm going to do this. He didn't talk to their counsel. He didn't even think about how it might implicate the organization.
Which is certainly a questionable move. On the other hand, how many times have we gotten calls? Everybody gets calls asking for advice about something, and you don't think twice about informing your current employer necessarily. Now,
that would be you and me.
Yeah. Well,
listen, when I worked at Hedger Barton Institute, I did some, you know, controversial things myself. And, you know, I would tell our boss, look, I'm going to do this. You know, I was never stopped, but they were informed.
Well, I did some controversial things while working for Hedrick Martin and didn't inform our boss and got in a lot of trouble, but was saved by the skin of my teeth by
the First Amendment
and the publicizing. The publicizing.
You don't mean me.
Nothing wrong with the First Amendment. All I'm saying is that there are, I think, several sides to this story. You know, Alfonso is being accused of collaborating in the attempt to smear one of the Cuomo employees who charged him, Cuomo, with sexual harassment. Alfonso says, no, I wasn't collaborating in that. I was handing over a paper that I was required to hand over. And when they asked me to review a letter about her, I told them what I thought was wrong with it and I wouldn't sign it. They said, well, then you asked other people to sign it, but the letter was never published. It's complicated. And I'm not entirely sure that, you know, we know Alfonso, but not well.
He was the guest on the show when he was at Lambda Legal Defense.
Sure. That was
a long time.
Long time ago. We don't know the inner workings of the board at all. But it just feels like this has escalated in a way that was unnecessary. And I think HRC is embarrassed by the fact that Alfonso's name has been in the news with this scandal. And I think they got a lot of complaints by donors who were upset about Alfonso, and by a lot of run-of-the-mill people who were putting comments on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, saying, resign, resign, resign. And I just wonder whether they have jumped the gun on this in firing him.
Alfonso tweeted, as a black gay man who has spent his whole life fighting for civil and human rights, they cannot shut me up. Now, we invited you to come on the show, Alfonso, and
we did
talk.
We're not here.
And, you know, we invited you. But we got no response. So, you know, look, Alfonso kept saying he did nothing wrong and that he knew nothing about Cuomo's sexual harassment. If he were here, I would say, well, what did you witness in terms of Andrew Cuomo's bullying behavior, which was constant and relentless? I mean, and the other thing is, as the story developed and this stuff came out, why didn't you speak up earlier and call for Andrew Cuomo's resignation?
Well, he did. He did call for his resignation.
When the report came out, he said, I was disgusted. He called for his resignation. But a lot of stuff came out before that. And that he could have talked to the people he knew and say, was any of this stuff credible? I mean, there were like 8, 9 women who were making accusations. He didn't come out early and call for Andrew Cuomo's resignation, as many Democratic elected officials did.
Well, the speculation is that this will end in a settlement with him that will...
He's legally challenging his firing.
And the prediction is that legal challenge will end in a settlement between...
Not with getting back his job. Now,
certainly not. I certainly don't expect him to get back his job. I think he's trying to rescue some part of his reputation so he can go on to other jobs and not be completely anathema to every potential employee.
Well, I think it doesn't help having a public spat over it, you know, but that will be, time will tell about that.
I just think there's a lot of confusion here. And
well, he said he had a lot of support from the board, and they were unanimous against him when they voted. Now, we also asked his interim successor, Joni Madison, who is a lesbian, who had been chief of staff and CEO at Human Rights Campaign. We have a picture of her there. There she is. She had expected to work in the administration of the other HRC, Hillary Rodham Clinton, She's from North, but of course Hillary lost. She's from North Carolina. She was once the CEO for McKinney, the big ad company, but she's, you know, involved in Democratic politics and has been working at the Human Rights Campaign for a while now.
But the real question is, can any of them pass the Equality Act?
Right. Yes. And that's what we wanted to talk to Joni Madison about. Where are you on this? What are you doing about it? Are you saying that we have to get rid of the filibuster in order to do it? Are you pressing your friends in the Congress, to Senate, to do that? And also, we want to know, and we have a right to know, what kind of negotiations are you engaging in around the Equality Act? Are you going to make it a less than Equality Act in order to get it passed? Are you going to pass extra religious exemptions? These are the things we want to know.
We do. I have to say I'm quite skeptical at this point about the possibility of passing it in this Congress. I think we need a lot more Democrats in the Senate to come close to passing it. So,
well, meanwhile,
I'm not optimistic at this point.
We remind you of the Bostock decision, which does protect people on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity in most employment. Now, of course, its use in other areas is being challenged.
Yes. All right. Well, are we done with this to the extent we can be at the moment?
Maybe they'll come on next week.
It's let's put it this way. It's sad from top to bottom. And if I were Alfonso David, of course, I never would have gone to work for Andrew Cuomo in the first place because I think he's a monster. Look, he's just been a complete waste of time for a very long time. But we'll see what happens with all of this. The other big story of the week, of course, or one of them, is the abortion decision, the new law in Texas, and the Supreme Court's refusal so far to issue an injunction against its going into effect. And what the law does, as you well know, is say that you cannot have an abortion after more than 6 weeks of pregnancy, and that the state is not going to enforce this. They are going to hand over enforcement to private citizens who are allowed to turn people in who are connected in any way with the provision of an abortion after 6 weeks. It doesn't matter whether you're the driver who takes a woman to a clinic or the clinic personnel or the woman herself or whomever, you get to turn them in and get a bounty of $10,000.
It's completely outrageous, and the court should have stepped in based on Roe v. Wade, which guarantees to women a right to abortion up to 24 weeks. Viability, not 6 weeks, when, I mean, I listened to AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, talk about this. I mean, it is hard to know whether you are pregnant at 6 weeks. You can often miss it that you are pregnant at 6 weeks. You're talking about some kind of a zygote or something in there.
Well, you don't know until you don't really think you even might be pregnant until you miss a period, and that can be pregnant for several weeks by the time you even think that it's a possibility. Women would have to be taking pregnancy tests on a weekly basis, maybe a daily basis, to establish pregnancy at an early enough point to be able to meet that six-week deadline.
But that, the 5-4 majority, and don't forget, Roberts voted with against letting this law go into effect, but you've got the horrible five right-wing nuts on the court now. There is no exception for rape or incest in this law.
Now, this was a refusal to enjoin this law. And what they said was that it's actually such a novel approach that they couldn't. I know, you're rolling your eyes, but I'm just quoting them and talking about the situation. Such a novel approach in setting up this bounty system that they were not inclined to make a fast decision. Ridiculous, I know, but that's what they said.
Well,
they have not precluded overturning this law. They say they need a plaintiff. They need someone who has been identified as a violator of the 6-week limit to be able to consider this. So technically, there is an opening still for them to.
In the meantime, women who are trying to exercise their constitutional rights are suffering and being turned away, and the clinics are closing. And I certainly hope that there will be funds to, let women travel to other states, which is can be very difficult, even if you have the funds to take time off and do that. But I hope that there will be a system of that. Now, a judge in Texas for at least 2 weeks said you can't sue Planned Parenthood over this. Corporations are notably silent about this, except for Uber and Lyft, which have said if any of our drivers are sued, we'll pay the costs on that. They're standing up. And of course, some Republicans are kind of alarmed about this because they've always gotten away with passing these draconian laws and having them stopped by the Supreme Court. And, Mitch McConnell was backing away for it. Susan Collins, who trusted Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Barrett to respect Roe v. Wade, says this law is extreme and harmful. Yeah, you think? I mean, she's the one who's extreme and harmful, but they didn't get rid of her in Maine.
I think that clinics that provide abortion services in neighboring states are already finding themselves overwhelmed with requests for abortion services by people traveling from Texas.
Can the people who transport them there be sued?
Not if the services are not being performed in Texas, I wouldn't
think. Well, you used to be, in Ireland, you used to be able to be convicted of having an abortion if you went overseas to get it. So I don't know.
I don't know. And it also, opens up all sorts of horrendous policies if we're turning over enforcement of laws to the populace instead of...
Not just the populace, everyone in the world. Everyone in the world. Somebody in Tanganyika can, whatever. Now the Biden
phone book and make accusations.
Right.
Now, ironically, of course, in neighboring Mexico, the Supreme Court there has just declared bans on abortion unconstitutional in Mexico.
Well, the criminalizing of it, yeah.
This does not immediately legalize abortion in Mexico. In some places, it is already legal, like Mexico City. But it means that now the rest of Mexico will be compelled to legalize abortion.
And our court will be taking up the Mississippi law, which bans abortion at 15 weeks, which was previously considered extreme compared to this. But that will be their opportunity to overturn Roe v. Wade as they want to and leave it to the states. And don't forget, one of these states could pass a personhood amendment declaring the zygote as a person, and then abortion can be illegal throughout the United States.
Well, it is, of course, a Texas federal judge who has made all sorts of rulings in the last few years that have nationalized horrible decisions, and he has just run roughshod over any sense that there are any limits to that.
President Biden and the Justice Department are looking at ways to preserve the right to choose in Texas and elsewhere. Lawrence Tribe has been quite outspoken. The legal professor has lots of suggestions. Citing federal laws against depriving people of rights, quote, under the color of law, which is what this bounty system is. And he's citing a statute that was used against the KKK. The kids at TikTok are doing great things, trying to screw up the reporting system. What else?
Let's hope that this energizes people to vote next year and get rid of more Republicans.
Well, Biden and Harris ran ads warning about this, and it didn't seem to help them in some of these states. Maybe it did. There will be a women's rights march on October 2nd nationwide. Bette Midler has the Lysistrata suggestion. I suggest that all women refuse to have sex with men until they are guaranteed the right to choose by Congress. And she went on about the cruelty of the Republican Party in this case.
And lest we be too narrow in our definitions, we should acknowledge that as we talk about women being pregnant and having abortions, there are also trans men who are getting pregnant and should also be eligible to use these services.
Absolutely. And actually, AOC was quite sensitive to that in her statements about this. Can we talk about the great abortion rights advocate that we lost,
Patricia
McGinnis, a pre-Roe v. Wade abortion rights activist, dead at 93. She was raised Catholic in Oklahoma. She founded in 1962, folks, the Citizens Committee for Humane Abortion Laws, and then with two other women formed the Association to Repeal Abortion Laws, which is now NARAL Pro-Choice America. They were called the Army of Three. They had to engage in systematic civil disobedience. It was illegal to mail literature, not just about abortion, but about birth control in those days. They led classes on how to conduct do-it-yourself abortions. They referred to legal abortion providers in Mexico, Japan, Sweden. And she said she was driven by rage because she worked in an army hospital when she was in the wax and saw what happened to women who had botched abortions. The New York Times once referred to her condescendingly as a spinster with the eyes of a zealot when she was 38 in 1966. She also worked for racial justice, gay rights, animal welfare. But she was once seen when she was in the wax walking with a black soldier. So her superiors got upset, reprimanded her, and shipped her off to Panama as a punishment. So she was the real thing.
Well, I think, you know, Roe v. Wade, 1973, 48 years ago, most of the U.S. population does not remember the time before Roe v. Wade and does not remember the horror of illegal abortions and do-it-yourself methods and backroom doctors who were not qualified, who were making money by performing these very rogue abortions. I knew someone who went to Puerto Rico to get an abortion in those days in the late 60s because they were illegal in the United States. Well, it was
not a state.
It was providing, there were abortion services there
that were legal.
That I don't know that they were legal, but that was one of the places people went to get abortions. The movement for women's access to reproductive health care, safe and legal, has been going on for thousands of years, but more specifically, long before Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade was the final culmination of decades and decades and decades of a movement. Patricia McGinnis was, of course, a major part of that, but people just, you know, the abortifacient pills have changed the game somewhat, but not everyone knows about them, not everyone has access to them, and we are going to see a lot more back-alley abortions if we continue down this path.
And Texas wants to ban those pills now.
Exactly. And let's not forget the extent to which contraceptives are still an issue. The Catholic Church in Mexico is freaking out about this court decision. The Catholic Church bans contraceptives. And they're very, very active in these political discussions.
The Catholic Church doesn't think women should be leaders in their church.
And the evangelicals are not supportive on this either. So this is going to continue. This is a fight that is going to continue.
It's very weird. They surveyed evangelicals in the early 70s, and they didn't have a particular problem with abortion, like they do now. It all came down to wanting to put women back in their place, basically. It's all about oppression of women, and that's why they embraced it, because of their patriarchal natures.
All right, well.
They think God is a man.
God?
Yeah, they think God is a man. I'm an atheist, but, you know. All right, sports news?
Yes, we can get to something a little more uplifting. So Carl Nassib came out a couple of months ago, a pro football player, And everyone was very excited about this, but there was still this little smidgen of a doubt. Would he actually be able to end up playing in the NFL in the regular season games? And the answer now is yes. He has been officially put on the roster of the Las Vegas Raiders, formerly the Oakland Raiders. And the season starts, actually, we're taping on Wednesday. It starts with a Thursday night game this week and then the weekend. I'm not sure exactly when the Raiders are playing, but Carl Nassib is on the team. And it'll be very interesting to see how he gets referred to in the games.
What position does he play?
He's a defensive lineman.
Oh, well, maybe people, you know, he's going to scare people off because he's a fierce gay.
Well, the question is, will he get hassled and taunted by his opponents on the line? Because that's a very close situation where you're lined up waiting for the play to start, and
the league can penalize you for that. The league can even penalize people in the stands who start anti-gay chants or something.
They can, and they've just strengthened their rules against taunting, so it's entirely possible that they could go after people for that.
To America.
Oh, wait, he's playing and. He's playing Monday. The Raiders are playing Monday night in Monday Night Football. So look for Carl Nassib Monday night on the game.
In pro baseball, we got the first pro baseball player to come out as an active player, Brian Ruby of the Salem Keizer, K-E-I-Z-E-R, Volcanoes. He just came out.
They're a minor league team in Oregon. But he is the first active pro player at any level to come out.
And he's also a country musician and wants to make it easier for future players and country musicians. One of his teammates, Gabriel Cotto, C-O-T-T-O, has two dads and said he's now close friends with Ruby now. They share the experience of, you know, being bullied a bit for who they are.
A very cute story about the teammate. I like that.
Right.
And also in Oregon, we should mention that the out bisexual governor, Kate Brown, who's been governor for almost 8 years, is term limited out. And one of the chief candidates for the job to succeed her is the out lesbian House Speaker, Tina Kotek, who is a progressive, but who's made a few compromises because the Republican legislators walk out in Oregon when they don't like what's going on, much as the Democratic legislators in Texas. But there's a lot of churning in Oregon.
And much more churning in California. We will remind you again that there is a recall election there for Governor Newsom. If you don't vote no, you're likely to get somebody with 11% of the vote, like Larry Elder, who was a horror show. I see Caitlyn Jenner's down to 1%. September 14th vote, you can vote now. It's so critical. You don't have to like the guy, but you don't want Larry Elder.
Well, Caitlyn Jenner, most recent gaffe, was appearing in a CNN interview and saying she's pro-choice, but she has no argument with Texas banning abortion.
That's their right. That's states' rights.
They can do what they want.
Same with she defended DeSantis' COVID response. Well, that's his state. She's a numbskull. Equality California, by the way, the big LGBT rights group out there, has proposed letting all of their employees who want to unionize do so. A group has signed their intent. They're going to let supervisors and frontline employees unionize. So good for them.
Yes.
Labor Day.
I thought that was terrific. Now, in political adjacent news, we have a new family in D.C., Pete and Chasten Buttigieg, or as some announcer said, Chasen. Pete and Chasten Buttigieg have brought home twins.
Penelope Rose and Joseph August.
They were pretty cagey about this. They talked about their family expanding, and they talked about expecting to be parents, but they were not clear about the fact that they were having two kids, not one.
Now, why they're in a hospital bed, and that they both have those things on, like they're patients. I don't know what's going on there.
I don't either. But they're not, it's not clear whether these were kids born to a surrogate or adopted or what.
No, it's none of our business.
None of our business, doesn't matter. But the right wing is losing its mind, of course, referring to them stealing the children from their mother.
Even Meghan McCain likes them. She didn't like Pete too much when he was on the show, but all right. Yeah. All right. In the Fourth Circuit has ruled that North Carolina can be sued for violating the Affordable Care Act over anti-transgender state employee health plan, which categorically excludes treatment for gender dysphoria. That covers 720,000 employees. It's a Lambda Legal case. It upholds a decision a year ago from a U.S. district judge, which for the first time, a federal appellate court ruled that claims of sovereign immunity do not protect states from liability under the ACA if they receive federal funding, which they all do.
Well, also in North Carolina, an exciting court decision.
Yeah.
The court in North Carolina has ruled that a gay teacher who worked at a Catholic high school, Charlotte Catholic High School, was discriminated against when he was fired for posting about his upcoming marriage to his longtime partner.
In 2014.
That's Lonnie Billard on the left, who is the teacher, and Rich, his now husband, on the right. The court issued a summary judgment saying that this firing was, first of all, the question always becomes religious freedom versus non-discrimination laws. Well, what the court said very appropriately and traditionally is that Lonnie was not teaching religious subjects. He was not engaged in being a teacher of doctrine.
Taught English and drama, and then became a regular substitute teacher.
Therefore, he was not, the school could not claim that he was violating their religious precepts by talking publicly about his marriage.
Well, the EEOC said a long time ago he had the right to sue, and this was on the basis of sex discrimination. And the judge of this case was very clever with the school. They said, "Are you claiming the right to do any other sex discrimination in your school?" And they said, "No." Oh. So you can't do it to him.
Yes, he did win. He sued on that basis, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, that he was being discriminated against because his partner, his fiance, is male instead of female, and he won that argument. They now go to a trial to assess damages or how to compensate.
Now, it's likely to be appealed to the Fourth Circuit, but a majority of judges there are still Democrats, and I use the term, that doesn't solve all problems, but it's helpful. By the way, Billard was Teacher of the Year in 2012.
They all are. All these gay teachers who get fired are Teachers of the Year, highly commended. I don't know what it is about these schools.
Well, obviously, so blind
to the value of these people.
But it could end up in the Supreme Court, where we have to be nervous. We have to be nervous about a lot of things in the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
And of course, all the stuff with abortion and all these things has intensified the call for expanding the court. In Iowa, another story like that, the seventh grade literacy teacher, Lucas Kaufman, made a class presentation that featured the rainbow flag. And when the students asked him, he said, "Yeah, I'm bisexual." And so the district put him on leave. 100 10th graders, we have a picture of a couple of them, walked out in protest. We love this. Now, the Winterset district superintendent acknowledged that Kaufman was put on leave after a conservative website posted a story about his presentation. But the super said, we're not allowed to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. It's prohibited in Iowa. But he's not saying, why, you know, why did he do it then? And the Iowa State Education Association, the union, says you have a right not to hide your identity. The student protesters said that having out-of-the-closet teachers helps them navigate their own identities, and they worry that students will be punished for coming out there. 1,500 have signed a petition supporting him.
The students are brilliant on this. It's such a pleasure to read these stories, to read the quotes from the students, because they're so far ahead of all the grown-ups on this.
This is a public school, but they do it in Catholic schools as well.
Yes, everywhere. The students are smarter than the administrators, which is a pleasure, but makes you wonder why the administrators are in charge. A couple of other little things. In Chicago, they've canceled the Pride Parade again. It was postponed from June to October because of COVID. They're canceling it completely this year. And in West Hollywood, the Halloween Carnival has been canceled because of COVID.
All right. Now, we're coming up on the anniversary of 9/11 shortly. The gay priest, Michael Judge, the fire chaplain who died there as he rushed down there to the wounded towers, he's been called the saint of 9/11, but his Franciscan brothers, he was in the Franciscan order, they wear the brown robes, told Irish Central that they're not part of a movement to have him canonized, where there is a movement. They say it's too soon. Now, of course, John Paul II was made a saint in 5 minutes, and they've yet to take it back now that he's been proven to be complicit in the case of Cardinal Ted McCarrick, who is now under indictment for raping kids. But Michael Judge, oh, we're not ready yet.
Well, he was pretty out as a priest long before his death.
To a lot of people, not everywhere, but to a lot of people. And he did AIDS ministry as well out of his church, and he was a terrific guy.
Yeah, and there's a documentary about him by our...
There is one, but Brendan Fay is doing another documentary about Michael Judge now.
Okay.
All right.
Never too many. In Missouri, right-wing members of the legislature and a legislative aide got an LGBTQ history display removed from the Capitol building. It's Making History, Kansas City and the Rise of Gay Rights.
Created by students at the University of Missouri at Kansas City.
Now, this is, of course, government censoring content. Not a good thing. But there's been no resolution of this yet. We're hoping for a reinstatement of this display. In Washington, a court has rejected a challenge to a law that bans conversion therapy. The court said this law protects minors who would otherwise be subject to abuse by people trying to convert them from homosexuality or trans status or whatever. So the court has struck down the challenge to the ban on conversion therapy.
A couple of crime stories in Atlanta. Outside a black gay pride event at a nightclub, 5 people sustained gunshot wounds 6 o'clock in the morning on Monday at the Marquette Lounge after a fight by concert patrons. The suspect is at large.
And in Bushwick, Brooklyn, 2 guys go into a convenience store. Not a joke.
Not these two guys. These are the guys of the likely perps.
The perps took the 2 guys in the convenience store for being gay. Only one of them was, evidently, and attacked them outside the bodega, I think. No help. Nobody helped. And they got gay bashed and attacked and robbed.
They got sliced up. They got their lungs punctured. They got their faces slashed. It was a brutal attack.
Yeah.
One of the survivors of the attack, Adalaja, his name is, he said, if I weren't 220 pounds, 6'2", with military training, I'd be dead. And the thing is, the bodega did not protect them. They begged the bodega owner to protect them. So they're starting a whole campaign out there. A lot of people are. There's a march out there about this, I think today or soon. But, you know, to say, you know, local businesses, please protect people who are giving you their business, who are LGBTQ.
At least call for help. Tiny ray of sunshine in Texas. The latest special session of the legislature, they're evidently just going to keep meeting sequentially until they pass Governor Greg Abbott's agenda. But the latest session killed two anti-trans sports bills. So for the moment, they're off the table. But Governor Abbott is going to call a third special session.
Well, they have to have a special session around redistricting, and he could throw in the anti-trans bill there.
He can.
In California, the legislature passed a bill to kickstart a pilot program to better track the gender identity and sexual orientation of victims of fatal violence. And that includes not only murders, but also suicides. And they're going to train people who are medical examiners and coroners to compile the information. Senator Brad Holman in New York is considering a similar bill.
Well, we have a couple of deaths to acknowledge. In Naples, Florida, Dr. Clinton Potter, 61 years old, died of COVID, the first out gay doctor in Naples, Florida. He co-founded Naples Pride and a lot of other local LGBT organizations. He was in San Francisco before Naples and helped HIV-positive people there get care. And his mantra was, be kind for no good reason.
Right. He survived throat cancer, but COVID took him despite being fully vaccinated, likely due to the immunosuppressive cancer treatments. These are the people we're seeing who are vaccinated who still can get sick. Back in California, he was medical director of something called Camp Hakuna Matata, a summer camp for children and their families affected by HIV/AIDS. He just had a life of service, 61 years old.
Much too young.
And now we talk about actor Michael K. Williams, who has died at the age of 54. You've all heard that. Not gay himself, but best known as Omar Little in HBO's The Wire, an infamous stick-up artist who robbed drug dealers, who was gay. And by the way, they only hinted at it at the beginning, and he kind of moved the gayness of the character along himself. He just once grabbed the guy he was with and kissed him. It wasn't even in the script. Congressman Jamal Bowman said Omar might be the best character of all time. President Obama said this was his favorite character also. He also played the San Francisco gay activist Ken Jones in the ABC miniseries When We Rise, which was based on Cleve Jones' memoir of the gay movement there.
He started his career as a backup dancer for Madonna and George Michael, and I want to know, are you sure he wasn't gay?
He
wasn't.
Well, he told The Guardian once, in the hood, especially among the black community, homosexuality is taboo. But I get real gangsters coming up and saying, Omar's my man, I love Omar. I think it might have made some people think differently about things.
Well, that's not a statement about his personal sexuality.
No, I know, I don't know, Anne. I don't know.
Well, you declared him not gay, and I'm simply saying we don't know.
Okay. Maybe I didn't read it up. Yeah, he did have four Emmy nominations, including for Lovecraft County this year. He also starred in the movies Bessie, Boardwalk Empire, The Night Of, and he was in 12 Years a Slave.
Yes. All right. International news?
Switzerland. Tens of thousands. They're going to vote on September 26th to affirm same-sex marriage, and it's certainly headed that way. Tens of thousands marched for marriage equality in Zurich. That was nice to see. Yeah. 70 groups participated.
At the Pride Parade there. But things are not so positive in China. A lot going on there. First of all, the government of China has told broadcasters to ban sissy men, I use the quotes, from TV. They don't like seeing K-pop stars, the Korean boy bands.
They have a picture of like the kind of thing that they're opposed to.
Yeah, this is a K-pop type guy. I don't know if he's actually a member of a boy band, but he's certainly seen as having the sissy image, advertising whatever drink that is. But they are known for protesting social injustice, these K-pop bands. And so China is not comfortable with them being idolized publicly.
But they're also going after women who have abnormal aesthetics, and they're persecuting them over this.
They say TV should promote traditional, revolutionary, and advanced socialist Chinese culture.
And also, at Shanghai University, they have asked its colleges to make lists of their LGBTQ students and report on their, quote, state of mind. It's another intrusion on gender and sexual minorities. Shanghai Pride had to shut down last year after a 12-year run. That was the country's sole annual LGBTQ Pride celebration.
It makes one nervous about the gay games in Hong Kong next year.
I wouldn't. I have friends that were going, but I wouldn't go.
Well, on the one hand, you'd hope that it would be a way of breaking through this. But on the other hand, knowing the relentless crackdowns of the Chinese government, it's hard to imagine they're going to get away with it or have any real effect. Meanwhile, in Pakistan, the Muslim authorities there have ordered the taking down of a billboard wishing happy birthday to a member of the K-pop group BTS, band member Jungkook. They say that this billboard promotes homosexuality.
I hope so.
Well, I can't disagree with that, but it's a pretty subtle and sophisticated understanding on their part.
How did Liberace get away with it in the 50s?
He didn't.
Well, yes, he was accused of, he was called homosexual, and he sued, and he won in Britain. Anyway, in Spain, a horrible thing. 2 months after that horrific anti-gay killing of Samuel Luis, 24, in Coruña, that repulsed the nation. A 20-year-old gay man was assaulted in Madrid in broad daylight on Sunday. His attackers sliced him with a knife while hurling anti-gay slurs, carved the word maricón into his buttocks, sliced his lip. There have been 103 homophobic attacks in Madrid alone this year.
That we know of.
Yes. Afghanistan assaults continue. On gay Afghans by the Taliban. They're luring gay men using dating devices and then,
lots of reports of gay men hiding out all over Afghanistan, literally hiding in closets.
The Canadian group Rainbow Railroad has been in contact with more than 200 LGBTQ Afghans trying to escape. I'm sure there are many more.
They've received one report of a killing of a gay man, and there are other reports of gay men being beaten and raped by the Taliban. It's really ugly. Better news from Poland, where the chief rabbi made a statement condemning anti-LGBTQ laws in Poland as Poland slips more rightward.
And we've told you about the progress that's been made in India getting rid of anti-gay laws. And one of the key people in that who just died was Salim Kidwai, K-I-D-W-A-I, an Indian scholar who unearthed long-buried literature on gay love in India. He's died at the age of 70 of cardiac arrest. He was an independent scholar and co-editor of a transformative anthology on same-sex love in literature from ancient Sanskrit to the Mughal era poetry to modern short stories. He was the scion of a prominent Muslim family and an eminence in Delhi's LGBT community when he published Same-Sex Love in India, which contributed mightily to the repeal of the anti-sodomy law there, according to the lawyer who led the case.
He really taught the population of India that homophobia was not a part of traditional Indian culture, but was in fact a product of the British culture brought by the colonial government.
As a young man, he studied in Canada and in Montreal. He was one of 150 people arrested by police in a raid on two gay bars when he was studying at McGill, a raid that provoked massive street protests and led Quebec to ban discrimination on sexual orientation within months because they were so appalled by this. He was asked late in life if he had any regrets, and he said, "If I was to believe in rebirth, I would want to be born gay, believe it or not. I'm not a masochist, but I've had a lot of fun."
Well, he was a complete hero and a fundamentally important person to the liberation of LGBTQ people in India. In Australia, the conservative government there has rejected a proposal to protect gender identity and intersex people in employment. Step backwards in Australia.
Damn them.
All right, AIDS news.
Yes, go ahead.
DaBaby, who the performer who has become notorious in the last couple of weeks for his homophobic and AIDS-phobic remarks at a concert and then defending himself, was finally convinced to sit down with some black, out HIV-positive people and AIDS organizations for a good, long talk. And he was taught about the real information about HIV and about stigma. He's reported to have listened respectfully and to have engaged with people. So fingers crossed that there is progress for DaBaby.
And we'll have another update next week.
Yeah, we'll see if he becomes adult.
He needs to get together with Lil Nas X.
Yeah, well, Lil Nas X is having the most fun time of anyone in life, and he has a new album coming out on the 17th, and he's performing at the MTV Video Music Awards this weekend. This is the cover of his new album, Montero.
It's quite revealing, but he's not letting it all hang out.
Well, he did a lot of publicity shots with himself as pregnant, to say he was pregnant with the new album. This image is taken from another historic image, a painting that he has borrowed for this. I think it's gorgeous. He is really just so creative and so fun, and good for him.
Tell us about My Name is Pauli Murray, Anne.
Well, this is a new documentary that's on Amazon. My Name is Pauli Murray is the name of the documentary. She was amazing. Patricia McGinnis, she was just a fundamentally important activist. She was a lawyer, a priest, a poet.
Non-binary.
She was, eventually she described herself that way. She was a role model and mentor for Thurgood Marshall, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Eleanor Roosevelt. So this documentary is coming to theaters on September 17th, but to Amazon Prime on October 1st, and we thought we'd show you the trailer.
There are some people who now argue that you cannot teach American history without teaching about Pauli Murray.
Pauli was a writer, a lawyer, a priest, a poet. Pauli was a feisty woman.
My name is Pauli Murray. My whole history has been a struggle in a society dominated by the ideas that blacks were inferior to whites and women were inferior to men.
Pauli was way ahead of the times.
I chose for my senior paper, should Plessy versus Ferguson be overruled? My little argument went to the Supreme Court.
Y'all see all of the different folks that are in this room? That is made possible by Pauli Murray.
If you rip away everything, oppression is the business of not respecting one's personhood.
My first 2 years, I was the only woman in the law school. They didn't even let me talk.
Thurgood Marshall is talking about Jim Crow, and she says, what I'm experiencing is Jane Crow.
Pauli Murray was not just an amazing lawyer or a badass feminist, but also a queer, non-binary person.
Sitting in front of Murray's notes,
the turmoil and the suffering,
this is a feeling I know well.
Scholars who have written about Pauli largely still use feminine pronouns. I don't know what pronouns Pauli would say.
Trans and gender non-binary people have always been a part of our American context. So did y'all just think that your generation invented it?
But if
this country is to survive, we must live together in harmony.
Polly may not have realized they would be a beacon for so many folks.
Polly's time had not come. We have to work for a world in which it does come.
You say, I can't, I'll show you I can, even if I die trying.
Highly recommended.
Thank you.
Do we recommend impeachment? Did you watch the first episode this week?
I did. It didn't seem that alive to me. But I mean, maybe it'll get better. It's like we have like 10 episodes to go. They're all very familiar.
There are 10 altogether.
Right. Very familiar. It's based on Monica Lewinsky's story, and she's one of the producers, so a lot of it is told from her perspective, Impeachment, American Crime Story.
I have to say that as I started watching it, I felt such anger well up in me at Linda Tripp, and it only increased as the show went on, because as Sarah Paulson plays her, she is even worse than I remembered.
Sarah Paulson's doing a great job behind the makeup. It's terrific. And Beanie Feldstein is Monica Lewinsky. I'm certainly going to give the series a chance. Monica Lewinsky gave an interview in The Times, and I was struck by the fact that, you know, of course, she went through all this, you know, horrible experience and shame and all this kind of stuff. But when Tyler Clementi was killed, her mother went into a tailspin, because her mother had taken her in after this and protected her from taking her own life. And it really was very, very difficult. The other thing that helped Monica was a friendship with Alan Cumming, starting in 2000. And they became pals and very close, out gay guy, back when he said she almost wasn't really human to people. And he describes her as warm, kind, hilarious, and witty.
In our last minute, a couple of other films coming up to recommend. Divino Amor, coming to streaming services on the 14th from Brazil. It imagines Brazil in 2027. Instead of looking at critics of the right-wing Bolsonaro evangelical movement, it looks at that as what would the future be if this continues. It's very scary and odd and compelling about an evangelical cult called Divine Love. So Divino Amor from Brazil. And then there's a French movie called Little Girl coming to theaters in L.A. and New York on the 17th and then online. It's about a 7-year-old girl, Sasha, in rural France. This is a documentary about a family dealing with their little girl who is a trans girl in rural France.
And Dear Evan Hansen, the movie with Ben Platt, who won the Tony on Broadway, September 24th in theaters. It seems to be making people cry.